Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. I am joined once again by a repeat guest, someone who was on almost 2 years ago to the day that we are recording, and possibly to the day when I release this, Ann Zander.
Hi.
Welcome back.
Yeah, it's been so long.
It has. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
Getting from
well,
here to
well, thank
there.
You. Yeah, well, yeah, getting from there to here.
See what I did there?
The amount of times that I actually get that song stuck in my head is kind of upsetting.
Yes. But before we jump into the episode of Star Trek, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself?
Cool. You don't want to just quickly talk about the opening music of Enterprise. I am Ann Zander. I'm a performer, writer, producer. Last time I spoke to you, Scott, I was based in London, and now I'm based in Portland, Oregon, which is near where I grew up, and doing comedy and writing stuff out here. Just finished a solo show. So yeah, having a good time and, you know, as always, watching lots of Star Trek.
And so let me ask you, I don't know, are you a donut person?
Yes. For some reason, I thought that that was going to be a Star Trek question, and it took my brain a second to be like, wait, what does he mean?
Why would you think it's a Star Trek question?
Okay, unrelated to Star Trek. Yes, I like donuts.
So the two great loves of my life are Star Trek and donuts. I enjoy many donuts, and I have been to Portland a few times, and there are many donut outlets in Portland. And so I would just wondered if you had a favorite donut place in Portland.
Well, so that's a great question. And part of that's a great question because I'm vegan, so not every donut place is the, you know, optimal donut place for me, but I really like Blue Star donuts. They're not paying me, although, you know, they should.
they should. I have been to Blue Star Donuts, and I am not a vegan, and they are delicious.
Yeah, yeah. Just some of their donuts are vegan, but they always have, like, a few vegan selection. So it's not just like, here's one, sorry, if you don't like it. there's a few. And one of them that they sometimes have is, like, just, like, I really like just, like, a powdered sugar donut. Mm-hmm. Like, just a classic. Mm-hmm. Classic donut. So yeah, that's probably my favorite Portland one, but there's definitely a lot of good ones here. And a lot of them now, I think because it's Portland and because it's 2019, do have at least a couple of vegan options. So.
I think so. And when people go to Portland, they always search out for Voodoo Donuts, which are fine. I have nothing against Voodoo Donuts. The problem I have with Voodoo Donuts is that everyone is there and you have to stand in line.
I've never
forever.
Been like gone past it when there wasn't a huge line. And I don't think I've ever actually been there as a result. Like I grew up not in Portland, kind of outside of Portland. And I don't know how long it's been around, but I don't think it was on my radar if it was around. And then, yeah, basically since I've moved back, I was like, well, that looks unpleasant waiting. There's literally like, what are those things called? Like, ropes, like you would have for like a movie theater or like the airport, you know, like
a nightclub
to control. Nightclub. That's a better example. But yeah, like to control the line that's mm-hmm. leading up to Voodoo Donuts. So
they're tasty, but very few things in life I feel like are worth waiting in line. And they're
exactly.
not. And Blue Star Donuts, you do not have to wait in line. You may have to wait into like a normal line. They are delicious. So there you go. If you go to Portland, go to Blue Star Donuts. That's your tip. And if you're a vegan and you're in Philadelphia and you want a donut, check out Dottie's Donuts. They serve only vegan donuts and they have a wide variety of donuts. And my fun story, well, fun in quotes, my story, that's better, about Dottie's Donuts is I work in IT. And it was System Administrator Appreciation Day, and we bought a couple dozen donuts for folks, and we got them from Dottie's Donuts, and we didn't tell anyone that they were vegan donuts, and nobody was upset until
afterwards. Sorry. Yeah, until afterwards, and then they were like, wait a second, that was delicious. I hate that I was tricked.
Exactly.
That's a fun thing to do, is not tell people that something delicious is actually vegan.
That's right. People have strong opinions one way or the other about veganism. So
Yeah, I'm definitely not in the camp of, you know, telling people what to eat and what not to eat, other than myself. But
right.
I still think it's kind of funny when you can kind of upset people's preconceived notions through delicious food.
Yes, and I feel like people have, and we'll get to Star Trek. I feel like people...
People. This episode was kind of...
It's true. It's fine. It's fine. It's an Enterprise episode. People's feelings about vegan food and vegetarian food, I feel like, are very rooted in like 30 years ago when it was totally. Like, oh, I have to eat like alfalfa sprouts and a stalk of broccoli.
Plain tofu, no like no flavor. Just like,
there's plenty of tasty vegan food. Give it a try, people. That's the two things you need to try. You need to go to Blue Star Donuts and give some vegan food a try, for goodness sake.
PSA.
Well, I guess we should talk about the episode that we watched, because we did both watch it. It is an Enterprise episode. Observant listeners will already know what I'm about to say. It is Shadows of Pangem, which is Pangem. I don't know how to say it. Season 1, episode 15. According to Memory Alpha, although it was episode 12 when I was looking at Amazon Prime Video when I watched it, but it doesn't matter.
It was episode 14 on Netflix, and I looked this up. It was filmed as episode 14, but aired as episode 15. It swapped 14, 15. So I don't know why it was 12 on Amazon's just doing its own thing.
I think Amazon has the first Enterprise episode, which is a two-parter, and most places they just is one.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And they may have another one, so it doesn't really matter. Yeah. You'll find it on all the streaming if you want to watch it. But spoilers, you probably don't need to watch it.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, I recently rewatched Enterprise, and I kind of like not in a very focused way. Like I kind of had it on in the background as I was working and stuff. And I was like, you know, it's not. Some parts of it are good, you know, like it's not terrible. I mean, there's lots of parts of it that are just kind of, you're just like, oh, so cringy, but there's like story arcs and episodes that are good. This is not one of them, I don't think.
This did remind me though, they are trying to do interesting things, right? So especially this is a Vulcan episode. It's all about the Vulcan and Dorian conflict.
Which plays out a lot in the first season or two. I think the episode that this refers back to, which is an Andorian incident, I think, is the one where they discover the spying station. So they go to this like monastery, which is what Pajem is, and then some. I'm like summarizing a totally different episode. the Andorians come, and then they're like. Convinced that it's actually like a station for spying for war purposes. And then it turns out it is like, it turns out there's this whole underground. So that's actually a pretty good episode.
Yes.
Like in terms of this plot line,
yes.
This one is like, just like, they really wanted to extend that plot line for some reason and then bring in a lot of completely unrelated things that we never see any consequences of later on.
It is true. And for people who want to, the Andorian incident was discussed in Random Trek episode 88, if you're interested in hearing us talk about
it. You don't need to hear my summary.
That's the, summary basically the summary. But it does, so Enterprise tries to do interesting things, like fleshing out the Vulcans, because the Vulcans never really were, I mean, they're an important race in Star Trek, but up until Enterprise, they were not really all that fleshed out. We saw Vulcan characters, but we didn't really know much of the Vulcan culture.
And I actually think the first couple seasons are kind of awkward with the Vulcans, because they are so, like, well, we are mean and we don't like humans, even though they're supposed to not really have emotions.
Yeah, they're space racists.
But I think they do a nice job of like demonstrating the evolution of T'Pol's character, and actually also Saval's character later on. I'm trying to look up this. There's another good episode that he's in where he actually like kind of comes around and starts defending the humans a little bit more. I might be able to find that later. But anyway, yeah, like I think it's interesting. It's kind of annoying at first though, because it's just like a lot of the same, like this, how this episode opens, which is basically Saval like scolding Admiral Forrest, and that's basically the whole relationship mm-hmm. for the first season, at least, between the Vulcans and the humans is, you know, the Vulcans being like, don't do it that way. And the humans being like, you held us, especially Archer being like, you held my father back.
That's right.
You held everything back, my father. And like really hating the Vulcans at first. And mm-hmm. it's just kind of like, I don't know. It just seems like manufactured tension. That's not very interesting to watch.
It is true. They try. I give them points for trying. I don't know if it was a success, but they did try. Yeah. So you rewatched Enterprise. My question was going to be, one of my major gripes with Enterprise, and people who listen to Random Trek whenever I talk about an Enterprise episode are about to say, oh, no, you're going to talk about the theme song. I'm not. I'm going to talk about the characters, because I don't think any of the characters other than T'Pol and Dr. Phlox are particularly memorable or interesting. So who are your favorite characters?
Well, I would actually agree with that for the most part. I think Dr. Phlox is like an early favorite. I think he's pretty good, you know, even in this episode, he's a little bit mansplaining, but that's not his fault. That's the writer's fault.
It's true.
Everybody's mansplaining to Paul in this episode.
Very true.
I think he's an interesting character. You know, I do think they get to grow a little bit later, you know, in some of the later seasons. You know, Hoshi starts off pretty, I don't know, kind of annoyingly scared of everything, which is like an interesting perspective to have somebody who's not really interested in going into space because of her specialty is languages. And, you know, but she gets to have a little bit of sort of evolution as the show goes on. I don't know. I'm never really a big, there's just some characters who I'm just like, I don't know why you're here. Otherwise, other than to just be like another archetypical male in the story. It's like, it's very gender essentialist. So like, there's just any episode where it's basically like, Malcolm and Trip and Archer, I'm just like, oh God. But to be fair, I do think they, this is going off track a little bit, but I do, you know, this episode, as I'm sure we'll get into, there's a lot of like super objectification of T'Pol's body, as there often is.
Yes.
In really gross ways. I will say that I think Enterprise overall does a lot more objectification of the men than in any other series. I don't know true. If any other captain is shirtless as much as Archer is shirtless.
He does often take his shirt off.
And same with like Trip and Malcolm. There's like just lots of shirtless, and the you know, the gel decon.
Oh yes.
Thing, you know, there's, I mean,
that's exploitive of both characters.
It is of both ways. However, you know, we live and view things through patriarchal lens. So like, even if it's like was 50-50, there's still an imbalance because of the way that we live and mm-hmm. the way the world is. But I don't know that like, objectifying everybody is like the solution.
No, that's totally, we've solved it, everybody.
I'll give them that. If you're, you know, if you're just looking to check out some hot bods and muscles are your thing, then, you know,
like, why not watch Enterprise?
I didn't watch. It's definitely got some of that.
So. It does indeed. I don't know, Captain Kirk didn't take his shirt off all that much. He got his shirt ripped a lot, dramatically.
Yeah. Yeah. He did get his shirt ripped. But in terms of just like, we're going to do this with our shirts up and get really sweaty, I think that happens in Enterprise, especially with like multiple men in a scene than it does.
That's true.
In any other series.
I can't imagine Captain Picard or Benjamin Sisko taking their shirts off and working on something.
Yeah, or like Picard and Riker.
Like, come on, Riker, we've got to go.
Unzip their, you know, top to the stomach and like tie it around their waist.
And then do something.
Yeah, and then like, yeah, repair an engine or something.
I could see Riker doing that, maybe, but Picard is not doing that.
Riker's a Lothario, but he's not really like a, I mean, don't get me wrong, Jonathan Frakes is a handsome guy, but I don't think he's like a check out my hot bod kind of guy. Right, you know, he's like look at my sparkling blue eyes and my
yes.
devil may care grin.
Exactly. He's more of a seducer, less of a look at my sculpted abs.
Yeah, exactly.
More interested in the person he's pursuing rather than showing himself off.
Yeah. It's just sometimes still is a little creepy, but
well, I do think it's interesting. Riker is an interesting character for many reasons, but I've had this conversation with a couple of people on this very podcast about how Riker is always hitting on everybody, seemingly anybody really he'll hit on, but once the person makes it clear that they are not interested, he stops.
It's true. And I've heard you say that. I think my qualm is the fact that he does hit on everybody. And oftentimes it's in like a work environment.
That is a problem.
As being somebody who has, you know, at times in my life been on the receiving end of that, when there's like a power imbalance or like there's, or even you're just coworkers, but you're like, oh crap, how do I now it's my responsibility to diffuse this situation, even though this other person started it, essentially. I think that's what gives me sometimes a little ick factor around him. But I do agree. I think he, you know, and again, that's because the people who were writing that character were mostly men with the perspective they had at that time period. And they didn't really, they couldn't imagine a world, you know, hundreds of years in the future where that type of stuff wasn't okay.
It's true. I do often think, where's Starfleet HR? Because this is totally inappropriate.
Exactly.
What do you do with this? Put your shirt on, Archer.
Yeah. Everybody in Enterprise is always like rubbing each other down in the decon chamber too, with, you know, super tight camera shots on everybody's abs. It's just,
it's not right. It's not right.
It's a lot.
It is a lot. Oh boy. Well, before we get into the episode itself, because we're not going to spend a whole lot of time on this episode, I want to talk about.
I have a lot. I'm just kidding.
Exactly. Let's talk about Archer. He's in this episode. He is the main character along with T'Pol of this episode, basically. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on, if you had to rank Star Trek main captains, where would you place Archer?
I mean, in this episode, he's a real butt. Like,
yes, he is. He makes a lot of interesting choices for T'Pol.
Exactly. It's like, you know, I blame the writers because they're like, it's like, I can see that what they're trying to express is that he really values her as an officer and he wants to like stand up for her. But what he does instead is just like say like, you freaking idiot. Like how could you want to, you know, he basically just like berates her for falling in line with her orders and basically tells her what to think and what to feel. And that's kind of his style, I think, throughout, again, like the first couple of seasons. He does improve somewhat later down the line. Again, I think just like, I don't know, the writers were like, oh yeah, we can't, like this character needs to grow in order for things to happen. But I think they intentionally wanted him to be, you know, it seems to me that they wanted him to be like really bullheaded in the beginning. And, you know, like I mentioned, the stuff with his father and the Vulcans and... I don't know. And maybe it's because Scott Bakula just seems like such a sweet guy that it never really, I never really buy it. And it just seems weird and mean in a way that doesn't seem to serve the series. But I think as time goes on, you know, he does like value T'Pol's input more and more throughout the series. He gets better, shall we say, but he's definitely pretty low ranking on he would be towards the bottom on my list of captains, especially if I was a woman, as I am serving under him, because it just seems like he does not value women's opinions.
No, he doesn't seem to value many people's opinions, women's in particular.
Yeah.
I think that my main problem, and I say this every time we talk about an Enterprise episode, because I like Scott Bakula. I think he is charming and a good actor. And then they put him in this kind of prickly pear, kind of dour, jerky kind of captain's role. And I'd think, why are you wasting Scott Bakula as this character? And it doesn't seem to work for me. Like the disconnect I have between what I know Scott Bakula can do and what he is doing in this show, even though I think he's doing what they wanted him to. So I'm not saying he did a bad job. I'm just saying I think the writers made bad choices.
Yeah.
And so it frustrates me. I am frustrated.
To me, the choices should have been either make him much more likable because he's a very likable actor, mm-hmm. or make him super dark.
Yes.
Like make him so dark and have a really traumatic backstory. Cause like the backstory that like my dad was like an engineer and he almost made I can't even remember what the specific thing was. Like he almost got to make the warp engine or he almost got to do it was something, you know, yeah, like he, that. But then the Vulcans held the technology back. Like it just doesn't seem like a dark enough origin story for him to be as mad as he is all the time. Like, I mean, if as a result his dad had become like an abusive alcoholic. I mean, I don't wish that upon anybody, even a fictional character, but like then maybe you could understand his like complete anger and rage, but it just, I don't know. It's like his attitude seems way out of proportion with his backstory. And so, yeah, I think they should have either really lightened him up or really made him way darker.
Turn into the darkness.
Yes.
Yeah, that would have made it more interesting. And instead, I think we get this. And I think I kind of get what they're trying to do with him right there. Like, this is the first Starfleet ship, so they want someone who can make decisions and is like a rugged individualist and all this stuff. And
white man.
Exactly. We need a white dude here who could just make everyone's decisions for them.
With patriarchal values.
Exactly. That's what we need for our first ship. I just don't think it was the right choice. That's where we are. So he is also, sorry, everyone, on the bottom of my list of Starfleet captains that from the series. There are many Starfleet captains that are worse than Captain Archer. So, But as main characters, he is my least favorite. All right, well, now we've talked a lot about stuff about Enterprise. We should quickly talk about the episode. So, Anne, as you already mentioned, this is kind of a continuation of the Vulcan and Dorian arc that they have created. The Vulcans and Andorians don't get along. Vulcans are logical. Andorians like to blow stuff up, I guess, is really what we found. And this episode does have one of my favorite Enterprise characters. What's his face? Sharn? Is that his name?
Shran.
Shran, there you are.
Played by Jeffrey Combs?
Yes, Combs, I think it is.
Combs. I don't know. It's spelled like Combs, but for some reason in my head I pronounce it as Combs.
I think it might be Combs. Wrong. I don't know. Well, he's in everything, Star Treks.
I was looking him up on Memory Alpha, and he's got like a dozen characters listed, although some of them are like, what's the guy's name from DS9?
Weyoun?
Yeah, some of them, it's like Weyoun 1,
oh,
Weyoun
yes,
2,
plays
Weyoun
multiple 3, Weyouns.
And you're like counting that all as different characters. So I was like, okay, well, he doesn't have quite as many as it seems, but.
Yes, he is one of my favorite guest actors.
Me too. He really livens up what is otherwise a pretty dull episode.
Yeah, this episode is very boring until the Andorians appear. And even then, this episode also includes perhaps one of the most boring firefights I have ever seen.
Yeah, there's so many. So, I mean, do you want to go through like
The Vulcans are angry because the humans, they blame the humans for telling the Andorians about their secret listening post. And so they're like, oh, we're taking T'Pol back and going home.
That's what's just happened is the Andorians blew up the sanctuary or whatever monastery.
Yes. And so the Vulcans are not
pleased. There's so much exposition in the first like 10 minutes of this episode. So like there's that opening scene with Saval and Admiral Forrest and then the opening music, which we've already mentioned.
No good.
And then it goes into what I titled exposition breakfast.
they're drinking some orange juice and talking about things you need to know.
Yeah. They're like recapping I think they aren't even recapping yet. They're just like, oh, Vulcan mining agreement, blah, blah, blah. There's a planet we're going to go look at. And I literally had to rewind it several times because I kept spacing out.
You didn't miss anything.
Pay attention to the details of the setup. And I just couldn't. And then Archer like plays a like unnecessary trick on before he tells him. He's like, I'm just going to take Hoshi with me to the planet. For no reason. And he's like, Like, you can come after he gets upset.
Yeah, it was a very strange thing. I don't know. And it was just like, that isn't even, that's just a jerk move. It's not funny.
Exactly. No, there's so many things in this entire episode where I'm like, I think this was supposed to be written for humor and it's just not funny. It's like, just that part was mean.
Yeah.
You know, there's later parts where I'm like, this is just deeply uncomfortable, not funny.
Yeah. I don't know. So they find out, oh no, T'Pol, Vulcan High Command says you have to come home.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay, I'm going to come home. Archer's like, no, how dare you want to come home?
What? You can't make that decision for yourself. I'm intervening.
That's right. You're my science officer and you're staying here. Darn it. And she's like, I was only assigned for 8 days. I've already been here for like 6 months. Get over yourself.
Also, they use this plot device many times on Enterprise where T'Pol is, I think this might be the first time, but they use this plot device a lot where they're like, T'Pol is being recalled for some reason, for something that she did or Enterprise did.
And Archer's always outraged.
Yeah. And spoiler, she never leaves.
That's right. And then Archer, this is another decision that Archer makes for her as he decides, well, I'll take T'Pol with me to the planets because I'm only allowed to bring one other person for some reason. And it will be T'Pol because I need to spend some time alone with her, which I thought was weird. So they do that. They get shot down by.
And even before that, rebels. Sorry, I just want to mention that that's the scene in between where T'Pol is eating vegetables and Dr. Phlox. This is his one scene. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, until the end. Oh,
he
also tells her, basically is like, well, are you sure? And like kind of manipulates or tries to manipulate her into like agreeing to stay. Anyway, bad times.
Yeah, it's not great. And then they go down to the planets. Turns out there's like a rebellion happening. So they get shot down and taken by some rebels. The rebels want 40 phasers. Everybody's like, we're not giving you phasers. And my least favorite part of this episode, they tie Archer and T'Pol together, and then they have to like wiggle out, and they wiggle to look at each other, and it's just weird.
So I've written many things about this part. This is the most that I wrote about any of them. The first thing is that there's like so little chemistry between them.
Yes.
And I can't figure out if they're trying to, if like the writers or the director or whatever was intending it to seem sexy or funny or both, but it's neither because there's no chemistry between them. Archer's just like making inane comments about who he's like, again, just like, oh, I wonder about if Houdini could get out of this. You don't know who Houdini is. Let me tell you.
Are you double jointed? No.
Conversation. And then they do, I did laugh because I was like, oh, they're basically doing like a theater exercise where you like sit back to back or stand. Mm-hmm. You just start standing, hook your elbows together, and then try to sit down and stand up.
And they did that.
And it is a little bit hard. It's not as hard as they're making it look for two extremely fit people.
Yeah, you'd think they would be able to do it pretty easily. And Vulcans are supposed to be much stronger than humans anyway, so.
For strength, you know, even though she isn't as visibly muscular. And like they try it once and fall over. And then afterwards, when the second time they try, which is presumably like the 20th time they've tried after stuff off screen, the acting on like they're trying is so bad that it just looks really easy.
Yeah, you know? they basically just stand up and you're like, well, why couldn't you do it?
Yeah, and then when it goes into the like, she goes, if we can turn around and face each other, and then he goes, we might be able to untie these knots. It's a stupid writing.
Yeah, it's not
and then
good.
There's the whole implausible thing of her being able to like, she's very, very slim. And has a very small waist. However, her waist is wider than it is deep. And like, it's just completely implausible that she would be able to like do a 360 turn in the bindings that are that tight. And in fact, every time she does make a significant turn, they cut to a new shot, which is funny.
Yeah. And I was like, I was trying to think like the discomfort I felt watching it. Was I supposed to feel that because they are supposed to be professionals and they are also uncomfortable? Or as you said, are they trying to play this as funny? Or I just didn't know how to read the scene.
It was completely illegible as a scene to be read. And, you know, and then it culminates with her falling on him with her boobs in his face, which is just like, and it lingers on that shot for seconds. you know, like it just lingers before they do anything. And I was like, I mean, if this was like a slapstick comedy from the 70s, there would be a huge like laugh track here, mm-hmm. which would also be bad. But like, it just, because it's not a comedy, it's just like, what? This is so unnecessary and awful.
Yes.
And also right before they fall, he basically refers to her as a thing. He's like, that's when he says, they took something important from my father. I won't let them do the same to me. And then she falls on him. Boobs fall on his face.
Yeah. And that's the point at which I thought, well, now I'm not even going to give you the benefit of the doubt that you were trying to make it like that they were professionals and they were uncomfortable by this as well, because you end with this thing.
Yeah. And then they do like continue to untie each other from that point. And, you know,
they escape. Well, they don't escape. They try
to escape. Then this whole buildup. I mean, actually, I thought that was kind of a good, if this scene had been better or more interesting or faster paced, the kind of payoff to the scene is that they get separated, but not totally untied. Somebody comes in, Archer does he rolls onto his back like he would be about to do like a kind of breakdancing style jump onto his feet, and instead like just kicks this, you know, guard in the face, mm-hmm. which is a pretty cool move.
Yes, that was the best part, I think.
Yeah, and then, you know, they're about to get his weapon, and then like three more guards come in, which I think actually is a pretty good, again, if that whole scene had lasted, of them trying to get undone and apart had lasted like 20 seconds instead of several minutes, then that would have been an interesting build, being like, oh, we've escaped. Oh no, we haven't escaped. But because it was so painfully long, it was just like, yeah, it was just like a build to nothing.
Which I think is a metaphor for the whole episode, because not much has happened. And that, I think, is frankly probably the most exciting part of this episode.
Yeah, it is. He kicked a guy in the face.
and then the Vulcans show up and they're like, where's T'Pol? We want T'Pol. And they're like, we don't know. And then Trip and Malcolm are like, we are not going to wait. And they beam down. They find the shuttle. They try to get the shuttle or the pod and they can't find it. And they're ambushed by, oh no, you think they're rebels, but they're not. They're the Andorians. And you're like, hooray, finally.
And you're like, hooray, here we go. Is that somebody interesting?
Exactly. But suddenly, sadly, the Andorians don't really do much except say, I don't want to be in the debt of Captain Archer, so I'm going to help you.
Oh, God, it's the worst. I was like, I'm really glad you're here, Jeffrey Combs, but like this, the device to get you here is basically like insomnia.
That's like, true, he can't sleep.
I haven't been sleeping well because Archer kind of did me a solid, so now I gotta come back and save him.
Gotta return the favor. I do like, so the other thing I like is that, so they have this whole plan where they're gonna get Archer, they know where the guards are, they have an inside person in the thing.
Also, I could not follow any of that, like any of their actual plan. I was just like, again, I just kept like kind of zoning out. I was really trying to watch this episode and I watched it more than once. I knew that they had a plan. I just couldn't follow it anyway.
The plan is not important. What I like about it is that it does not work because they're doing it. And then along come the Vulcans, who also have decided they're not waiting. But the Vulcans' plan is, we're just going to blow stuff up and take them.
You're like casual, no matter the casualties. Yeah. Because before that, the Vulcans, had like tried to take over the operation from Enterprise. Yeah, and then a firefight ensues.
A boring kind of firefight.
A very boring sort of three-way firefight where there's the rebels, the Vulcans, and the Andorians, and whoever, Archer, is like, we're on the same side to the Andorians and the Vulcans. Mm-hmm. And
they're like, whatever, dude.
With no build whatsoever, one of the rebel guys like goes to shoot whatever that guy's name was.
That cranky captain.
Cranky captain something.
Sopek.
Yeah, I was like, I wrote it down somewhere. Yeah, Captain Sopek. And then T'Pol inexplicably jumps in front of it.
Takes a bullet for Sopek.
Oh, it's so dumb.
And then Archer, Sopek is like, well, we will take her to our Vulcan ship that presumably has Vulcan medical staff, which makes a lot more sense to take her to.
but Archer's still making decisions for her, demonstrated by the fact that he physically carries her like a like a damsel in distress, you know, like just in front of his body. Yeah, not even over his shoulder. Like he scoops her up like a fair maiden, and you know, carries him like without you know, the Vulcans are like, no. And he's like, I'm taking her, which
she's again, my officer.
She's not consenting to any of this. She explicitly said she's going with the Vulcans.
It's true.
That's her intention. But no, he physically takes her back to Enterprise.
Where Dr. Phlox has his final scene in the episode. And in fact, this is the final scene of the episode. She's in sick bay and the Vulcans come and say, hey, Sopek comes and is like, hey, how is T'Pol? I've almost forgot T'Pol's name. Yeah. And Phlox says, oh, actually, he says, is she going to live? Something like that. And yeah. Phlox says, I wish I could tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're all like,
she's fine.
Well, yeah. I mean, we all know she's going to recover, but then in the course of that, again, Archer basically manipulates
the whole thing.
That cranky captain. Yeah, he's like, you know, don't you think she deserves something for having saved your life? Would you know? Wouldn't an influential captain speaking to the high, what are they called? The Vulcan?
Vulcan High Command.
And I was going to say High Council. You know, on her behalf, maybe influence their decision to recall her because of the whole Pajem thing. And then he's like, maybe, basically. And then, like, leaves.
And leaves. Yeah. And then T'Pol wakes up, but she's like, OMG, what happened?
Immediately, he gives her hypo spray, which revives her.
Oh, that's right. Because it's all a ruse.
Yeah. Which is like, does that mean that they,
I think again, they knocked her out.
Sedated her without her consent and did all of this?
I will say that I don't think Dr. Phlox would do that. So I think that they sedated her to treat her. And he did not wake her up.
I really hope so. I mean, that's still bad. It's still bad because they should have woken her up and told her, this is an idea we have. Is that okay with you?
Yes, you I know? Agree.
Not, oh, let's just conveniently keep her sedated while we.
I assume Captain Archer has told him to do that.
Oh, absolutely. But just in terms of like the
which
fact
is not
that
good.
They don't, yeah, get her consent for any of this. Then they, yeah, revive her. She's fine. I mean, she's still needs to recover, but she's definitely like alive and well. And she's like, oh, I need to get up and go do my stuff I was planning to do.
That's right. And get back on that Vulcan ship because I'm leaving. And Dr. Phlox is like, I got to go and leaves.
Yeah. What happens? Like Archer
says, basically, you're staying. Isn't that great? And she's like, and he said, well, and then she said, well, I guess Dr.
Yeah,
Phlox.
He's like, well, you could still, he was like, she's like, you should have asked. She says that you should have asked my, I think she says my consent.
I think so.
She literally says that. And then he's like, well, he's still here. If you want to go catch up with him.
She's like, no, I can't. Doctor's orders, basically. I can't leave.
Yeah, which, again, like, just entirely removes her agency, like the writers have. They're like, and in the end, she agrees with all the decisions that were made for her.
And I kind of feel like you can read this two ways. I think that the way you're reading it is correct. But I think what they were trying to do was to say T'Pol really wants to be there, but she's a Vulcan, so she can't say that.
I totally agree that I think that was their intention.
I don't think that's the way it comes across,
and
but
I
that's
think
what
it comes across horribly. That yes. is not at all how it comes across. And I think, you know, in future episodes, you do get more of that sense of like, she really is loyal to this team. And there's times in the future where she does, like, of her own volition, decide to stay on several occasions where she would have had opportunity or even commands to leave. So like, clearly the character is capable of making this decision.
Well, this character is the most capable of anyone on the ship to make any decisions. I don't know.
I agree. Yes. Yeah. Oh man. It just, I, at the end I just wrote, what a bad and boring and confusing and pointless episode.
I agree. This is not Enterprise at its finest.
No. And there, you know, like I said, there is some good Enterprise out there.
Yes. This is not it.
Not it. This is not it.
Even
no.
the arrival of Andorians could not save this episode.
No, because the reason they arrive is so stupid.
And they don't really do anything. I mean, they have a prison break, but
they liven the scene slightly.
Yeah,
with their acting, with the actors' good performances, but yeah, and just like literally liven it with their blue skin.
That's
know?
True.
It's like a little bit of a change.
And I always enjoy what he calls them pink skins.
Pink skins, yeah. It's fun.
Oh, yes. Man. So I think I know the answer to this, but what did you think of this episode overall, Anne?
I think I just summed it up.
I think you did.
yeah, it's not very good. Don't watch it. Just, you know, like you can, I still wanted to find, there's another one, that I did want to find the, name of, cause there's another good one that kind of resolves this conflict. Somebody, you could probably, you know, people can Google. There's an episode that involves Saval and, Shran and Shran's, sub commander who's played by Susie. She's another one of those repeat Star Trek actors who's, she plays Worf's, like mate who dies and,
Oh, right.
I can't think of her name right now. Anyway, she's in that. Jeffrey Combs is in that. And then Saval also like actually has some like character growth and evolution. So, you know, there's better episodes that involve the Andorians, even though I think they are generally pretty fun on Enterprise. They're like some of the good ones to watch generally, but not this one.
Yeah, no, don't watch this episode. But I am glad that you did watch this episode, and because that meant we could have this conversation.
Yeah.
So thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. I mean, can I say one other thing that I noticed,
which was
funny? When they're in prison and they're like eating like that weird porridge.
Like oatmeal pie or whatever it is.
I was like, when T'Pol goes to like scoop some out with her fingernails are like perfectly manicured, of course. It's just like, oh, this is so ridiculous. Like she just like not a hair out of place, not, you know, not an eyelash or a fingernail out of place.
I did like the fact that when Archer, they give the food and then Archer falls over to try to get it and eat it. And he makes T'Pol eat it. I like how he has made a big deal of like falling over and scooting over to get it. And then he basically gives T'Pol an order to eat it. And she just like falls over with the most like passive aggressive fall over ever.
Kind of slowly melts to the ground and then uses her finger somehow to eat it instead of like Archer putting his face entirely into it.
Yeah. So that may be my second favorite part of this episode is that brief moment when she falls over with such scorn. Can you explain to me
what that transmitter was? What was that? I totally missed that part of the plot because wasn't there some kind of weird transmitter?
Yes, there was a transmitter hidden in his whatever that was, slop. And I think that was the Andorians have an inside person on the Rebels. So that guy put that transmitter in there, though they only use it when Trip is like 10 feet away and he says, right. Hey, we're outside. I don't know.
Oh, boy. Okay. And well, also, thank you for cleaning that up.
It is like the worst secret transmitter ever because it has a giant red flashing thing on it.
It's so big. Yeah. And it's flashing very brightly. Yeah,
it was very strange.
Luckily, that slop was very thick, so it really muffled any chance of that light passing.
The stucco or something. I don't know what it was. Ugh, gross. This I think that we can say this episode of Random Trek is more entertaining than The Shadows of Pajam. Pajam,
but I like Pajam. It sounds like an abbreviated word for pajamas, than PJs.
And that would have been better. I would have rather watched just a set of pajamas somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. I would watch a pajama shadow puppet show. Probably watching this again.
Yeah, it's not good. But thank you once again for watching this and getting through it.
You know, it was not fun to watch, but it was really fun to talk about. So I'm glad we did it, and we got to talk about, you know, donuts and veganism as well. So
what more can you ask for?